This podcast is brought to you by Windsor Management Insurance Brokers. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Josh Parrish. Welcome to the show. It's great to have your company this evening. It's the international break, Josh, and don't worry for all those fans who are craving club football to return. It will be back in action this weekend, but until we get there, there is a bit of international news to talk about. Of course, the Ollieroos are in action tonight. Plus, there's some Socceroos who are on the verge of potentially slipping in and out of different clubs. We'll have to wait and see who they are. But it's great to have you in the studio with me tonight, Josh.
And it's also very exciting to be broadcasting for the first time live, not only on Facebook, but on Periscope, on Twitter as well, and live on YouTube. So FNR going cross-platform.
And remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio, or if you are with us on Facebook Live, please comment below. We'll get through as many of those comments as we can over the next hour.
Indeed we will, Louise. But starting off with our first story, and this is broken just in the last hour or so, apparently Wales and Ryan Giggs are considering a swoop for Ryan Williams, the younger brother of Reece Williams, currently playing his football at Rotherham United in the Championship. He's a winger slash striker, mostly playing on the wing for Rotherham. And Ryan Giggs was spotted at the last Rotherham game watching both Will Vokes and Williams as he prepares his squad for Euro 2020. So it's possible that we might have a situation with two brothers playing for two different countries.
Yes, a fresh report that's just emerged, as you touch on. And do you think that given the fact that now the Socceroos aren't playing in this FIFA window, that it's given the opportunity for, you know, this story to firm?
Yes, absolutely. And it seems as if Williams still has his heart set on playing for Australia if he does get the opportunity. He said, "I don't know how I'd feel about playing for Wales. If I made it, if it made Australia get into gear and give me a shout, then I don't know. But I don't think I'd ever play for Wales, to be honest. It would be awesome, but it's just not Australia." So obviously he's still got his heart set on playing for his country of birth, grew up in Western Australia, so very much still feels Australian. But if you've got the opportunity to play in Euro 2020 alongside the likes of Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, and you don't have the Socceroos knocking on your door, then it's got to be a tempting opportunity. And I do think this is a missed opportunity for the Socceroos, given they didn't have a friendly this weekend. They could have brought a more experimental squad, tried out a few new players like Williams, who's been on the periphery of Socceroos squads in the past. But, you know, they chose not to have a game for budgetary reasons, also because Graham Arnold, you know, has a lot on his plate at the moment, coaching both the Socceroos and the Ollieroos. And I think it's a missed opportunity on many fronts, but especially on this one.
That's exactly right. And you have to say that, you know, the more that the Socceroos don't play, the less game time they're getting. And then, you know, like some of the players haven't even been playing at the moment at club level.
Mm.
So if we did have an international break and if they did make use of that, then they could have gotten more game time and more minutes under their belt. But now that opportunity has gone by and we'll have to wait until the next FIFA window. But just before we move on to when the Socceroos are going to be in action next, Ryan Williams' position is quite stacked though.
Yeah.
So although he might be on the radar of Wales and of Ryan Giggs, do you think that automatically, you know, signals, you know, the Socceroos to say, well, we should bring him into the squad so we don't lose him? Is that an incentive?
Potentially. And I think it has happened in the past that due to sort of country v country rivalries, teams have selected players just purely based on trying to lock them in. You know, obviously it's not competitive games, but if you have a player who's played a friendly, usually they will stick with that country. There are a number of notable exceptions to that. But, you know, generally that's the pattern. So I don't think it's necessarily, you know, a bad thing this is being talked about now, because you look at some of the wing positions are, you know, quite stacked for the Socceroos. You've got Robbie Cruz, Matt Leckie, Chris Economides, obviously Daniel Arzani and Martin Boyle when they come back from injury. So there's a number of good players in those roles. But I think at least one of those guys will eventually have to reinvent themselves as a number nine, whether it's Williams, whether it's Leckie, who, you know, I've nominated in the past as someone who has the physique and all of the abilities to play in that role. So that could open up a spot for Ryan Williams. And I think Wales are a quality national team, and if they're interested in him, that gives you some idea of the level he's playing at. I think he's been overlooked in the past because, you know, he hasn't played in the Premier League. He hasn't played for one of the bigger clubs in the Championship. Rotherham are a rather modest outfit who came up from League One. But he starts week in, week out for them. He gets a lot of game time, and that's more than can be said for a lot of players who are currently in the national team playing in Europe.
And remember, you can get involved at any time by tweeting to us or commenting below on Facebook. And David has come through, Josh, and has said, how good was your Sunday?
Oh, it was brilliant. David Svetkovsky accompanying me at Genesteel Stadium for Preston Lions' opening game of the State League One season. Fantastic to be there. Brilliant spread on offer, I must say. The food was excellent. The football was even better. Preston winning their first round one game in around a decade, I think, by defeating Clifton Hill in quite some style. 7-0 it was in the end. There was a red card in the first half to Clifton Hill, but that was at about 2 or 3-0.
And lots
already.
Of different goal scorers.
Yeah, six different players on the score sheet. So the new signing Sam Mason-Smith got off the bench and got on the score sheet, as well as Andre Zinio from Perth Glory fame, and a young player by the name of Nikola Talimjovski got a double. So it's just a fantastic start to the season, a great vibe at the club, huge crowd in attendance, and great to see Preston Lions, you know, back to their best.
Well done on the opening win. Going back to the Socceroos, a report has come out today to say that they actually won't be back in action until the next FIFA window, which is in June.
Yes.
Right? Now, originally the game was apparently going to be played in Australia, but now confirmation has come out today which says that there's no way the friendly will be played in Australia. So bad news for Socceroos fans.
Yeah, a little disappointing. I would put my money on Craven Cottage. That's been a home away from home for the Socceroos for many seasons past, many years past, and it's just easier for the European-based players to get there. You know, I wouldn't begrudge them just for a friendly match, not, you know, want to make the trek to Australia. Obviously, the fans want to see them play, but maybe the timing isn't ideal. And that suggests to me that Graham Arnold is looking to pick a primarily European-based squad for the next game. Whoever that might be against. But yeah, I think they have to get their act together and actually organise some really quality opposition for the Socceroos to test themselves against. Given the recent failings in the Asian Cup, they've got to, you know, really think about the next phase of World Cup qualification, which, you know, could be challenging whether or not the tournament is expanded.
Well, either way, it will be challenging because we have to qualify through Asia, and that's always challenging. Rumours were circulating around the fact that maybe we could be facing Korea Republic. I think that would be fantastic for the Socceroos to go up against a tough opposition like Korea.
Yeah, it would be the second time they've played against each other in quite short succession, of course, with that friendly before the Asian Cup. But I think, you know, testing yourself against the highest quality in Asia is the best preparation you could have for the qualifiers. Whether you might want to get some more variety or maybe bring a team that's located closer to wherever the Socceroos will play that game. I'm guessing it will be probably in England or somewhere in Europe. That might have practical concerns, but, you know, not a bad choice of opposition, who the Aussie Roos will actually be facing tonight, but we'll get onto that a little bit later.
They will, and that game kicking off at 9 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. And yes, so that next international break when the Socceroos will play is between the 3rd and 11th of June. There's also been some other peculiar transfer rumours surrounding one Socceroos forward, Tommy Juric. I'm sure you were across it yesterday and tuning into the show.
Yes, Persib Bandung, the Indonesia Liga 1 club with, you know, crazy fans, as we know about Indonesian football. It's quite insane, the level of support, the passionate support. And I think their fans went a little bit early on social media, you know, proclaiming that Juric would sign for them. It seems as if his father and advisor had a conversation with an agent that had some contacts in Indonesia, and then suddenly the story spiraled out of control. Doesn't look like he wants to move there, and he wants to continue his career in Europe for understandable reasons. I think it would be a step down in quality, even if the crowds are fantastic over there. And Tommy Juric is at a bit of a crossroads in his career. 27 years of age now, has been basically frozen out at Luzern, has barely played in the past year or so. And you wonder where else in Europe he can go to actually get some first-team football, because the Socceroos sorely, sorely need a striker in form, as we've seen.
And playing regularly.
Yeah, and Tommy Juric, I would say, probably for all his faults, and I know he has a lot of critics, he does have a certain skill set that might appeal to Graham Arnold. He is very, very good with his back to goal. He's very good at playing, you know, other players into the game. And we saw with Jamie McLaren, regardless of how good he is, he was just not a fit for the Socceroos' game plan at the Asian Cup. It's not just about whether he can get his head on crosses into the box. It's also about the build-up play. And a key part of the Graham Arnold system is basically the fullback hitting the centre forward at his feet and then playing in a midfield or a winger. And Jamie McLaren, because he's hanging on the shoulder of the last defender, just isn't able to do that at all. So you have an absence of a focal point. And I think Tommy Juric can provide that, you know, if he's getting games, if he's in form. You know, he's a big guy. He needs, I think, a bit of first-team football to get himself up to speed and, you know, in full fitness. But yeah, it's all about this next move for him. This could really define really the rest of his career.
And I don't think going to Indonesia at this point in your career is a wise move.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I think Southeast Asia, it's improving rapidly, but it's just not quite at a level yet where you'd want to go. If he's thinking about coming back to this region, he'd probably want to play in the A-League, you know, home comforts and all that. If he wants to play in Asia, you'd probably want to see him move to Japan, Korea, one of these, you know, bigger East Asian leagues where a lot of Socceroos actually do play their football. You don't see many Socceroos playing in Southeast Asia and actually consistently getting in national team squads, which is his ambition at this point in his career. So I think it would be a step backwards, unfortunately.
And you touch on his agent, who is his father. Mm-hmm. He said that, and he insisted that Juric's future lies in Europe. And, of course, his contract will be ending in May at the end of the season. So you mentioned where he might be going. We have no idea right now. Where is realistic for Juric to move to? What league do you think would he be suited? And where would he get game time?
I think one of the sort of mid-tier European leagues he could be accommodated in. I don't think, you know, he's got enough, you know, credit at the moment in terms of his recent form, because he just hasn't been playing, to get a move to one of the big five, big six leagues. But somewhere like the Netherlands, I keep coming back to, is a good place for Australians to play because, you know, there's quite a high level of technical quality, but also, you know, it's not so high that you can't make the first team as long as you're not playing for one of the giants. I think a mid-table Eredivisie team could definitely look at him. There are so many, you know, European leagues where he could fit in. You've seen Australian players play in places like the Czech Republic and Slovenia and Croatia and Serbia and all these kinds of countries. If there was the right fit in one of those places, then I think he, you know, should pursue it, because Europe still, despite the growth of Asian football, is the pinnacle for any Australian player wanting to play overseas, and I think he needs to stick it out there.
And you're right, we already have a couple of players in the Eredivisie at the moment. Alex Gerzbach is at NAC Breda. We've got Denny Jonro at Pek Zwolle. Same with Dean Bouzanis. I don't think he's really getting much game time, though. Mm. And, yeah, again, there's more Aussies abroad that are in the Eredivisie. So maybe a mid-table club there might be suitable.
It's also quite an open league. It's quite attacking. There's a lot of goals. And you've seen that with players who've scored heaps of goals in the Eredivisie going to bigger leagues. Sometimes it doesn't translate because, you know, it's quite an attacking league over there. And players who rack up 30 goals could be, you know, the next Luis Suarez, or they could be, you know, only effective at that level. But I think for a striker, it's probably a good place to get your eye in, so to speak. And Australia just is so bereft of options in that position. It's such a drought that you would be looking back at all the guys who've been selected and thinking, you know, could they have a role in the current setup? Could you recall one of them?
Who else might be in contention for the next friendly in that position? Mm. I really believe that Adam Taggart needs to be called into the Socceroos.
That was the name at the top of my head.
Especially, again, and I touch on this almost, you know, every week that we talk about the Socceroos, I can't believe that he wasn't included in that Asian Cup squad because he was in form at the time. Now, he's made his move overseas and I think he scored his a goal on debut. I'm not sure how he's doing at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, we'll have to have a look into that. But making a big move to Suwon is a real step forward in his career. I think the Brisbane situation, it was difficult to judge because he was honestly playing in a pretty bad team. But
still scoring goals.
He's still scoring goals, but he did also a lot of them were penalties. A lot of them were sort of off the same set piece routine. He scored quite a few headers just at the near post. I wasn't totally convinced. Also,
that was the key,
yeah,
wasn't it? He was scoring headers. And yeah, that's what we needed, an aerial threat.
We did need an aerial threat.
Because we lost Tim Cahill.
And, you know, arguably, Adam Taggart, despite the height difference, provides a better aerial threat than Tommy Urich. You know, just haven't seen Urich score that many headers over the course of his Socceroos career. Most of his best work comes with his physicality and using his body and the ball to his feet. You know, so memorably in the Asian Cup final when he set up that goal for James Troisi. Adam Taggart, just a quick update. He's played 3 games so far, just the 1 goal, and I think he's been subbed on in all of those. So he's not starting for Suwon, but
that's expected.
That is expected.
He's into the squad.
He's competing with Dejan Damjanovic, who's one of the greatest imports into Asia in recent decades. So,
and although he's over there playing at Suwon, he is still the 5th highest goal scorer here in the A-League.
That's actually quite a remarkable stat. But
totaling 11 goals.
So there's only been a few matches he's appeared in so far. Obviously, the international break has interfered with that as well. But he's played from halftime in 2 of those substitute appearances. The first game, he scored against Ulsan. The third game, he came on at halftime against Seongnam. And there was a 4-0 loss to Jeonbuk Motors where he played 25 minutes at the end of the game. Probably couldn't do much about that given Jeonbuk are possibly the best team in Korea. So, you know, not the most auspicious of starts, but he is getting game time. And coming on at halftime really is a good omen because a big difference between coming on right at the end, you know, 87th minute substitute and coming on at halftime as to where you rank in the coach's estimation. So hopefully that continues. Hopefully he can get a start under his belt before long. But I think we'll have to have a chat to maybe some of the K-League United guys soon to get an update on how he's going over there.
And you obviously don't want to firm as a super sub.
No, of course
you want
not.
To be in the starting 11.
Well, super sub's better than nothing, of course, if you're scoring goals. Certainly, I think the Korean under-23 manager would agree, given his top scorer exclusively comes off the bench. Adam Taggart, I think, is still a Socceroos prospect, you know, despite a number of injury setbacks in his career. And, you know, it's just all about finding the right environment in which he can be starting regularly and scoring. Same for Tommy Urich. And, you know, I just don't think he can re-sign his current club, Luzerne, because there seems to be no future for him there.
No future at all. And another Australian whose future is uncertain at the moment, but potentially becoming a little bit clearer, is former Socceroo himself, Harry Kuehl.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
He actually hasn't been at the helm of any club since he was axed by Notts last November after just 14 games in charge. And now rumours are linking him with the manager's job at Yeovil Town in League 2.
Yeah, and it would be a similar situation as to when he took over at Notts County. But Notts are probably a bigger club than Yeovil, I would argue. Not on the women's side of things. Yeovil are in the top league in the women's, which is amazing. In the League 2, they're in 22nd spot, just 2 points above the relegation zone. And, you know, he left a pretty stable position, it seemed, at Crawley Town to go take over at Notts County, and it majorly backfired for him. He was only in charge for 14 games, and it's such a cutthroat business there. It, you know, you take over a club in relegation trouble, you don't turn it around immediately and you're gone. So I think it would be a similar situation with Yeovil. They'd want him to, you know, get a few quick wins on the trot and get away from relegation. If he doesn't do that, he could be, you know, out again. And I'm not sure, right,
because they're currently 22nd on the table and they're just 2 points above the relegation zone.
And as a fledgling,
he seems to like these type of clubs that, you know, you got to build up and
potentially
work your way up the table.
Potentially. I'm not sure if that's just the only jobs he's being offered at the moment. But
and again, like, fair enough for sticking it out over there.
No, absolutely. I think he could easily get an A-League job if he came back here, but he wants to be based in Europe. I think, you know, his wife is from England and wants to stay there. But I think it's very important and I think underrated that Australian coaches succeeding overseas, I think, is very important to the growth of the game. We always talk about the players, but we never talk about the coaches. And Australia barely has any coaches. You know, the only updates probably Joe Montemurro and Ange Postecoglou have been the only recent success
like
stories.
Like the 1%. Yeah. But we did have John Van Skip at Pek Zwolle, but unfortunately he was sacked. But
he's not Australian, but he's got an Australian link, I suppose. No. Michael Valkanis was over there as well.
And he still is, I think.
Yeah, I believe so. He's remained as an assistant coach, which is good to see.
And you see what that in itself did. The fact that they had Michael Valkanis over there as well, they were able to bring the players like Dean Bouzanis and Denny Genro to the club. And then suddenly Denny was playing week in, week out in the Eredivisie.
Yeah, and that was something when Kuehl was linked to Charlton. It was something that was raised that could become a hub for Australian players playing over there. And it just creates so many opportunities when you've got someone who appreciates what Australian players can bring and actually has some background knowledge on them. So it's not just that. It's also just for the growth and development of Australian coaches. You may one day coach the national team or coach back in the A-League to be able to have some experience abroad and actually see what it's like, grow as coaches and really see the standard that is developing overseas. I'm not sure if League 2 is the, you know, right environment for that, given the kind of football, without being too dismissive about it, is pretty physical, is pretty kick and rush.
Do you think Harry Kuehl might look for other countries to manage in?
At the moment, I think just his personal life dictates that he has to coach in England, unfortunately. I would love to see him go over to the continent. But what is good about League 2 is the cutthroat nature of it and getting used to that environment. I don't think Australian coaches, you know, realise how good they've got it in terms of how much time they're given, especially with the absence of promotion and relegation in the A-League. There is really no, you know, looming threat that, you know, they can be axed after just a few games in charge. It's very rare. They usually get at least a year. So Harry Kuehl having that experience of being under the pump as a coach, it's got to be a good experience for him, especially if he can come through that and actually hold down a position in League 2 for a couple of years.
And you touched briefly on the A-League. Before we go to our first guest, we did hear from Melbourne Victory's captain today, Carl Valeri, who spoke after training. And he was touching on his teammate, Keske Honda, who is juggling his football career and also his managing career. And Valeri commented on whether or not Honda has too many commitments at the moment.
If it was anyone else, I'd probably be worried, but Keske is just a machine. He's a beast. I know he'll be away probably working harder than us. So from that perspective, we're totally serene and we're relaxed because we know that his professionalism, the way his work ethic to everything he does is amazing. We know he'll come fully prepared for the game against Perth because his hunger to win is amazing, and you can really see that in everything that he does.
High praise from Carl Valeri to Keske Honda, who I must say was extremely well-dressed on the sideline as Cambodia coach. And
looked like something out of Titanic.
Yes. I think our next guest was actually tweeting about his attire. But Carl Valeri also had this to say on Victory's Asian Champions League campaign.
Well, you know, I'm old school Italian style. Mathematically, until it's there written in front of me and impossible, it's well within reach. You know, the Asian Champions League, it's a difficult beast. And, you know, you can play so well and have a lapse for 3 minutes and go down. And, you know, that's what happened in our last game in Japan there. But in saying that, you know, if we can win, you know, the next two games, everything's all open.
That is Melbourne Victory's captain Carl Valeri. And, of course, they take on the A-League league leaders. Bit of a tongue twister there, Josh. Perth Glory this weekend. And Valeri said the squad didn't really get much of a break.
I like how, you know, everyone says break, but we actually got smashed all week, so it wasn't much of a break for us. So we did get 2 days off in a row, which is quite rare come this time of the season. So, I mean, to use the word break is, we're exaggerating there. We actually used the time very wisely to put a bit of extra work into the legs to take it into the back season. So break we didn't get, refresh it wasn't, we worked, and that's what we're here to do.
He speaks well, doesn't he, Valeri? I have a feeling he might be a coach one day. I can just, you know, see he's got that kind of attitude.
And obviously he's already got the leadership skills.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he definitely will you know, look to go into coaching. And Victory, I think they've had a little bit of a dip lately. And the dropping of Lawrence Thomas in the last game was fascinating, whether that's, you know, linked to a potential move to Japan. That window closes, I believe, on the 29th. So we'll find out soon enough, or whether Kevin Muscat was just trying to make a statement about the recent run of games, the results that weren't acceptable, and Lawrence Thomas being a big cultural figure in that dressing room, I think may have had a part to play in him making that statement.
Remains to be seen. Of course, Matt Acton came into the fold, and their next game won't be easy, but I love it how Carl says, no break for us.
Yeah, I'm sure the fact that they didn't have a game gave the Victory coaching staff license to really, you know, put them through their paces and make sure that they knew what was required and the fitness level that they need for the rest of the season.
And I'd be interested to know if the other club we're about to talk about, the Central Coast Mariners, who are cellar dwellers, had a bit of a break themselves, because I don't think personally that they would have under the new head coach and former Matildas head coach Alan Stajic. But we did hear from Jordan Murray, who spoke with media.
The gaffer's been brilliant. He's he sort of explained a really good structure, how to lead into games, and you know, describing how training's going to be set out and why, and you know, that's the type of thing that, you know, we need, and that really took us into the win against Newcastle last week, and I'm sure it's going to take us into the Adelaide game with hopefully another victory.
Jordan Murray speaking to media there, and it was just such a fantastic start for Central Coast under Alan Stajic. We'll see if they can continue that. But
3-2 win in the F3 derby.
It's difficult to imagine a more dramatic way to win a game with the retaken penalty and so forth, but you really did see something from the Mariners there. Unfortunately, a lot of it came from Matt Miller, who's going to be leaving the club next season, but for Alan Stajic, as caretaker coach, it's just about changing the mentality, getting the morale back into the team, and hopefully putting together a run of results that can see them at least try and climb off the foot of this table.
Well, that's exactly right, because themselves and also Brisbane Roar, well, Brisbane Roar are only 5 points ahead of them, so it's the race of who will get the wooden spoon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Louise, we must introduce our guest for the show. He's the journo who hosts the Daily Football Show and has been filing consistently on the Aussie Roos during their under-23 qualification campaign. Joey Lynch, welcome to FNR.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
And thank you very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time. But what have you made of these first two games? A little bit hard to judge the level the Aussie Roos are at, given, you know, the level of opposition.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, in my opinion, it's really been Graham Arnold. He's kind of taken that one-week training camp they had in Kuala Lumpur and used these two games to extend it. We saw in the sides of these run-out, Ivan Vujica was the only player to retain his space from the first game to the second. He made 10 changes for the Taiwan game, so he's clearly still experimenting and trying to find who's on form and who's not and who his best 11 will be to take on South Korea. So really, I guess tonight's the main event.
And Joey, who do you think will come into the folds for Graham's starting 11 tonight?
There's a number of positions which you could really say would go either way, because, you know, as Josh alluded to, the quality of the opposition wasn't very good. So, like, I'm not exactly sure how you can decide who the best keeper is, judging on the displays from the Cambodians or the Taiwanese. It's going to be very interesting to see who plays in the back line, because we've seen Tommy Deng wore the armband and Sutar set up a number of goals against the Taiwanese. But then you had Tasmor Dakutis, who has played in both games, and Wilson, who scored a goal against the Cambodians. So that's going to be a very difficult call. You've got the strike force. D'Agostino played in the first game, but Waring's come on and he's the only Australian to score in both games. So really, I'd say you'd probably expect Deng and McGree, the two players that wore the armband, to be locked in. I'd also imagine that Rene Piscopo will probably start, as will Joey Champness. Holding midfield's a very interesting one because we've got Aidan O'Neill, Keanu Backus, Sepp Pasquale and Denny Gionro, who played in those spaces, and really all four of them showed good signs. So probably a good headache for Graham Arnold to have in that there's a number of options he can go with tonight.
And Joey, who has really impressed you so far that you maybe hadn't seen that much of before? I think Rene Piscopo, there's been a lot of headlines written about him as a, you know, potential Socceroos star of the future.
Yeah, he's one that was impressive against the Cambodians and he was good in the warm-up games. I have seen some statements comparing him to Daniel Arzani. I wouldn't go that far given that, given how good Daniel Arzani was, but he was one that's definitely impressed me. Pierce Waring's another one that's really come on strong. He made the move to Japan this year and he's really seems to have adapted to life well there, the frequent training sessions, and has now probably forced his way into Arnold's plans, given that he scored in both games. And I was also pretty impressed with the work of holding midfielder Denny Gionro. I know he's not one, he's been on my radar for quite a while, but he was on set piece duty. He was really pulling the strings from that holding midfield as the quarterback of the Australian team against Taiwan. So he's another one that's impressed me.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you, Joey. I think Denny's been one of the most outstanding players in that Oli Roos team that I have seen over the past two games. Given the amount of changes that Graham Arnold did make from the opener against Cambodia to the last game against Taiwan, did you feel like there was a difference in quality between the two?
Well, there were some signs in both games that could be different opposition. You did notice that in the first game, the Cambodians were maybe slightly more willing to come out and attack Australia than the Taiwanese were. So I would say it was especially noticeable me in that first game against Cambodia that I think, as Josh alluded to earlier in the show, that Arnie likes to get his wing-backs up and bombing balls into the box. That was really obvious in the first 20 minutes against the Cambodians. And it wasn't really working in that first 20 minutes until they got that goal from that long throw-in to set everything in motion. And then you could see the Oli Roos begin to play their way through the Cambodians. And you saw a lot of slicing and dicing through the back line. Second game against the Taiwanese, you didn't really get that incisiveness through the middle, but you got a lot of joy from coming down the flanks and getting in behind the Taiwanese defence more so than the Cambodians. So there's been, I wouldn't say, it's very difficult to judge which performance looked better. It's just been different types of quality, I would say, in the two games.
And Joey, I've noticed that a lot of the goals have actually come from set pieces. Do you think that's, you know, an indication that, you know, they've worked on these things, or is it a, you know, physical advantage, or perhaps does it point to a limitation of the team from open play?
I'd say you'd have to say that there is definitely a physical advantage there. The Australian sides, especially when they're able to get those big centre-backs up on set pieces, are noticeably bigger and taller than their opponents. But it's very difficult to see. It's definitely something they'll have worked on because you've got Graham Arnold there, Rene Meulensteen's also there. So you've got the heavy hitters there that will have want to have worked on these set pieces. And as we all saw, me being an England fan, you know, you can ride set pieces a long way in tournament play. So there's nothing particularly wrong with that. And as I mentioned, in the game against the Cambodians, we did see occasions where Riley McGree especially was able to play through the Cambodians at times. So I think it's very difficult to make definitive statements about the way these Oli Roos are playing, purely because there has been so much experimentation and the quality of the opposition has been poor. So you really can't give a definitive answer to that until tonight when we see them up against a very good South Korean side.
A very good South Korean side indeed. Two from two. They've scored 14 goals so far, conceded just the one. How tight do you see this affair being? Do you think the Oli Roos can get over the line, or maybe will it be a draw?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, a draw, in theory, should be enough to get both of these sides through to the next phase, the AFC Under 23 Championships, which will serve as qualifiers for the Tokyo Olympics. But I doubt we'll see any collusion on that front. But it's going to be very interesting to see. South Korea did cop one against the Cambodians, which Australia didn't do. So maybe that's a good sign. But there's a lot of quality in this Cambodian side. The likes of Kim Dae-won, who Melbourne Victory fans might recognise, is playing 88 minutes against them for in the Asian Champions League, or there's Lee Dong-kyung, who scored 5 goals in the first 2 games for the South Koreans, both times coming off the bench. So that shows that he's capable of scoring quickly. The likes of Chong Young-wook, who plays for FC Seoul, started against the Taiwanese. He's a very good one. Lee Dong-yoon plays lots of minutes for Busan I-Park in the K2 League. So there's a lot of quality there. Maybe a saving grace for Australia is that I was just doing some looking around, trying to figure out all their danger men, and it seems that K-League United is reporting that Han Chan-hee has been released back to Korea for his club side. So maybe that can help out the Australians.
And of course, Han Chan-hee is actually one of the players who's made more than 80 appearances for Jeonnam Dragons in K2.
Absolutely. So maybe a good sign that he, for the Australians at least, that he probably won't be in action tonight if K-League United's reporting is to be believed.
Yeah, possibly a boost for the Australians. But I'm really intrigued by Lee Dong-kyung, the top scorer in the tournament so far. 5 goals coming off the bench on both occasions, especially given the hot and humid conditions. I think, you know, this tactic of the super sub might be pretty decisive in this game.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, he's come on in the first game against the Taiwanese and got goals in the 72nd and 73rd minutes. So he's very capable of scoring in bunches, scored another in the second game in the 84th and in stoppage time. So he's definitely one that the Australians are going to have to keep an eye on. Now, whether you can just say that he was coming on fresh as a daisy against tired, pretty poor sides to begin with is another question, but he's definitely a super sub to keep an eye on. But also, as I was saying before, Graham Arnold's been mixing it up as well, and Australia have been scoring pretty freely in both games, so maybe we'll have a super sub of our own up our sleeves if Arnie chooses to go that way.
And I've got a bit of a different tack on this question, Joey. Do you think it's a good idea for Graham Arnold really to be managing both the senior team and the under-23s at the same time? Because we heard from FFA directly that that's one of the reasons the Socceroos didn't have a friendly in this international break, because Graham Arnold simply had too much on his plate.
No, I don't think it's a good idea at all. I mean, you can look around the world, and if you can name me another premier footballing nation that has the head coach of their senior national side also pulling under 23's duty, I'd be very interested to find out who they were, because it's probably been made, I think one of the other reasons cited for this soccer is not playing was budgetary. It's also probably budgetary for the reason that we've got Arnold in charge of the 23's and the Socceroos. In fact, we saw Ante Milicic, he was already on the books at the FFA, was brought in and placed in charge of the Matildas. I don't think it's a good idea. I mean, even if the Socceroos were simply playing a friendly against New Zealand or even an Oceania side, just something to get the Socceroos out there working on something, maybe blood a few youngsters, maybe get some A-League talent called up, just see how they work in the system. I think in the long run, that would be a far, far better outcome for Australian football than having Graham Arnold in charge of both. Now, don't get me wrong, it's great that Arnold's showing an interest in youth and trying to bring young players through, because as he said in his press conference ahead of the qualifying games last week, the reinforcements for the Socceroos will have to come from the Olleroos and the young Socceroos, and apparently he's been very in-depth in that. I remember speaking to Dennis Jeanreau in the new year, and he said that even prior to Arnold naming his squad for the Asian Cup, he was calling up young players and talking about these Olleroos qualifiers, so he's clearly taking it seriously. But whether it's a good idea for him to even have to do that is another matter entirely, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's a real existential question, I guess, and probably reflects the fact that FFA, as we keep hearing, are a little cash-strapped. But on the bright side,
it would probably be a good question for the technical director to answer if we had one.
Yeah, absolutely. On the bright side, Graham Arnold is the last manager to have actually got the under-23s to an Olympics, doing so in 2008. Do you think Australia can finally, for the first time in over 10 years, actually qualify for another Olympic Games? What's your prediction?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. You'd have to say that in terms of talent, I think this squad is definitely talented enough to get there. Now, it's just a matter of whether they can realise that talent and firstly get past the South Koreans tonight and move into the next phase of qualification. But what I think will be critical in answering that question is that the AFC and the 23 championships aren't till 2020. It's how much game time can these Oliroos get in the months between qualifying and the tournament? Can they start plugging in minutes in club land and really begin to grow as footballers from, you know, young prospects into men, basically? Men that are capable, that though they might be playing for the Oliroos, could also fill in for the Socceroos at a moment's notice if needed.
Well, Joey, thank you for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and enjoy the game tonight.
I will do. Thank you very much.
Joey Lynch from Daily Football Show joining us here on Evenings on FNR, talking all things Oliroos. And I think it is a really good point he raises that you look internationally and so rarely is it that a senior national team manager is also managing the under-23s.
Which is what I said last night. I don't think it's going to work.
No.
Regardless whether or not the next phase after this, should the Oliroos qualify for the AFC under-23 championship, that's next January, right? Mm. So one of the comments made on Monday by one of our journos was that that's next year. That's next January. So, you know, we can take it easy, but that's not the case. I think that he needs to be taking care of the Socceroos, and I think an Oliroos coach needs to be appointed separately.
I'm not sure how that would work with his current contract, though. It's a very long contract. I think it's 3 or 4 years. But
how are you supposed to juggle both in the international break? Like, you don't expect, and I certainly don't expect, but I wouldn't be shocked if this was the case, if the Oliroos actually didn't get together until December of the end of this year, so December 2019. Which would be absolutely ridiculous if that was the case.
Especially considering the long A-League off-season and so many of them playing for A-League clubs. You'd want them to have some football in between now and then. And, you know, I know a lot of them, not that many of them, but some of them might play for, you know, NPL, you know, youth A-League sides or whatever. But, you know, the vast majority are already in senior teams, so they're just not going to be playing any football in between now and then. And I think it is a cost-cutting measure. It's whatever way you're trying to, you know, swing it, with Graham Arnold having a closer relationship with the under-23s and therefore knows which players can be promoted to the senior team and so forth. I'm sure there are benefits, but I think the negatives probably outweigh it.
Yes, they do. Because if the Socceroos aren't playing and if there's not all attention on the Socceroos, then, you know, I don't think you can juggle both jobs because both jobs are separate.
And they require different sort of skill sets. And, you know, I think the priorities of the under-23 team, you know, are a little different to the national team. It's not, even at that level, it's not results at all costs. You're trying to develop them as players. And, you know, the national team is a different kettle of fish entirely. So, yeah, I do wonder whether having a different coach in charge would give a different perspective, would allow, you know, a greater detail across both roles and potentially allow maybe younger players to be brought into the under-23s in the interests of future development rather than, you know, Graham Arnold bringing this Socceroos mentality to the Oliroos and just saying who are the best players regardless of if they're Socceroos calibre already.
Well, there's no reason why he can't have that hands-on approach regardless if he is solely focused on the Socceroos position. There's no reason why he can't.
Yeah, I suppose.
He can float in and out.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I think maybe in previous regimes, the Socceroos manager has been too distant, possibly from the youth setups, and hasn't been, you know, really casting their eye over those players. But if he was just the senior coach, there's no reason, as you say, of why he couldn't do that in the remit of the Socceroos role. But Louise, that game kicks off at what time tonight?
9 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. The Oliroos taking on Korea Republic in what I believe will be their toughest clash to date. We know that Korea will be coming in with a lot of experience. Many of those players who I did see at the under-20 FIFA World Cup back in 2017 in Korea itself, as they were the host country of that FIFA youth tournament. And again, already from that, you can see that they've brought in more experience than many of these Oliroos.
Yeah, absolutely. And Just take me through a few of the permutations. Obviously, it gets quite complicated, but a win guarantees progression to the next stage of qualification for the Olympics.
Yes, that's correct.
A loss by two or more goals.
It gets a bit more tricky because what happens is the first place team of each group goes through. Mm-hmm. The second place team is then put into a tier breaker. So they're ranked based on best to worst, second base.
Against
second
the
place
other
teams.
Groups, right?
Yes. So okay. The four best second place teams go through. And currently Australia are topping that. So it's Australia, Myanmar, Iran and Syria who would progress.
Mm. So,
and then anything other than that, then it could be a bit more trickier as the tier breakers are pretty tight for the second best place teams.
And theoretically a draw or a narrow defeat would probably still be enough for Australia to go through?
I think that would still be enough. But if we were to lose by three goals or more, then I don't think we'd make it through. And we would be crashing out at the first hurdle.
So a win assures progression. Anything else, it gets a little bit more complicated. But regardless, the Socceroos have pretty good chances of making it through to the next round of qualification after two emphatic wins in their first two games.
Yes, the Olleroos do. Korea, as I touched on, have scored 14, conceded just the one. Australia have managed 12 and conceded none to date. We heard from Korea's head coach who said he has rotated his squad quite heavily because of the conditions. It's 37 degrees over there. The pitch, they're playing on an artificial surface, so that's not ideal. No. Again, why they couldn't have natural pitches just blows my mind. But again, if they come out here to qualify, we'll just send them to Tasmania or the Northern Territory and they can play in those conditions. We'll make it hard for them.
Yeah, I think maybe Tasmania would be the hardest for those countries if they're used to it. Although Korea is actually a very cold country, so I think they'll be struggling with these conditions just as much as Australia will be. But Louise, there wasn't any A-League on the weekend, although there was a lot of NPL action across the country. So given that we don't always get an opportunity to talk about the second tier of Australian football, why don't we have a whip around the country and see what the latest NPL results are. Starting with Victoria, where Melbourne Knights had a thrilling 3-2 win over Port Melbourne Sharks to keep themselves in second position. Hume City have beaten Dandenong City 5-1. Dandenong City in real relegation trouble now. Pasco Vale, now this is an excellent one. We had the return of someone who's become something of a national hero over recent months, Louise.
Mr. Hakeem Alarabi.
Yes, came off the bench. They won 2-0 against South Melbourne. Terrific result for Pasco Vale. And it's just great to see him back out on the field doing what he loves when, you know, a couple of months ago it looked so grim.
Exactly. And it's great to see that he's returned back to the field and doing what he loves and what he enjoys.
And I had a look at the highlights, Louise, of that fixture, and they showed him coming onto the field. There was a big crowd in attendance again down at CB Smith Reserve, and he got quite the rapturous reception, I think, both from the Pasco Vale home fans, but also from the South Melbourne away fans as well. So it was a really nice moment.
And again, football is really the beautiful game because it brings, fans of all clubs around the country together and unite, basically. And that's what we saw with the whole Save Hakeem movement.
Yeah, it was, given that it's had such a happy ending, you can really classify it as a bit of an uplifting moment in Australian football because, you know, there's a lot of petty disagreements. It really bypassed all of those.
You'd have to say that football was really the driving motivator to get Hakeem out of prison. Because what happened was, as soon as Craig found out that it was a footballer, he then took it on his behalf to go and advocate, right? So then suddenly, and we even got Pasco Vale on FNR as well at the time. And then suddenly, you know, you're speaking to the football community and then the wider football community, which included the PFA, and then that spread to the A-League football community where we saw them holding up Save Hakeem banners in one particular round, and then it just kept expanding and expanding until we even saw some of the world's best footballers overseas getting behind Hakeem. So, again, it's just amazing what football can do.
Absolutely. Well, continuing on the NPL Victoria results, Oakley Cannons won 2-1 against Heidelberg United, something of a Greek derby down at Jack Edwards Reserve. Green Gully, you've had a great start to the season, actually went down 5-2 at home to Avondale, who topped the table. They are absolutely on fire, and Avondale fans, stay tuned on the FNR front for some news. Dandenong Thunder 2-2 with Bentley Green, so a great result for Dandy Thunder after going behind in that game. Bentley, one of the best teams in the league, so I think they'll be delighted with that result. Kingston City, however, lost 2-1 at home to Altona Magic, who have made a terrific start to life in MPL after being promoted from MPL 2 last season. So that leaves Avondale top of the table, as we said, with Melbourne Knights and Bentley Greens following in second and third, respectively. And at the bottom, Oakley Cannons have had a poor start after a lot of investment in the off-season. Port Melbourne Sharks are second last, and Dandenong City sit dead bottom in 14th place with only 3 points to their name after six games.
Shall we shift our attention to MPL New South Wales?
Yes, indeed. Well, the real story in MPL New South Wales so far has been the Wollongong Wolves, who started in absolutely electric form. Their leading goal scorer, Thomas James, has 5 goals already this season. So he scored 5 of their 7 goals. They drew 2-2 with Sydney United, another big team over there in New South Wales. So, you know, put the brakes on their electric start to the campaign under Luke Wilkshire, their new manager. But they're still top of the table on 7 points. Other results in that round of fixtures include Apia Leichhardt getting their campaign back on track with a 2-1 away win over Sutherland Sharks. Marconi Stallions, who I believe have just announced a partnership with Borussia Dortmund, celebrated with a 2-0 win over Sydney FC on the road. Manly United drew 2-0 with Mount Druitt Town Rangers. Sydney Olympic had a 3-all thriller against Blacktown City. And Sydney Olympic, after winning the title last season, are right down near the foot of the table. Rockdale City Suns lost 3-0 at home to Hakoa Sydney City East. And as I said, the 2-all draw up towards the top end of the table between Sydney United and Wollongong Wolves.
Great to see that that's the narrative so far in MPL New South Wales.
Yeah, I think Wollongong, after their disappointment with the A-League bid, they got axed at a pretty early stage. And
this is them making a statement.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think they want to be considered in future. They're a bit of a consensus candidate for A-League expansion. I don't know if it would work commercially, but people have that sentimental attachment from the NSL days. And, you know, it's such a brilliant stadium over there in Wollongong, passionate local community. So if they could make it work commercially, I think it would be brilliant to have a top flight team there.
And moving on to MPL Queensland, they've been going for 8 rounds now. Mm. So it's interesting to see how some of the MPL leagues around the country are stagnated in terms of when they start.
Yeah, and Queensland, you've got a bit more of a clear picture of where the sides sit. The story of the season has been Peninsula Power, who, with a 16-goal difference, sit clear at the top by 7 points already. 24 points from 8 games, so a perfect record. Stunning start to the season from them, where they weren't really anywhere near last season. I think they were mid-table, and Lions FC and Olympic were the two outstanding teams. They sit in third and fourth, respectively, with Gold Coast Knights, who've had a good start as well after the signing of Mitch Nichols, sit in second. So the interesting story from this week was really not about the actual results on the field, but the disciplinary action against Brisbane City, who've apparently fielded an ineligible player in the first 4 rounds of the season. Apparently an innocent administrative mistake, but Football Queensland, regardless, have come down hard. They've imposed a $2,000 fine, $6,000 suspended if they have another breach during the season, and they've had to forfeit results from 4 matches, the first 4 games against Redlands, Sunshine Coast, Peninsula Power and Gold Coast United. A couple of those were losses anyway. But the Brisbane City FC director, Mario Latanzi, said, "We recognise that Football Queensland had no discretion but to forfeit those games, despite the fact that the error was innocently made in the interpretation of the ITC regulations. We'd hoped for a lesser penalty due to the fact that the error was an honest one. However, we accept the decision." So Brisbane City getting in a bit of trouble for breaching some admin rules, and Football Queensland not pulling any punches with the punishment.
Crazy stuff there. But unfortunately, our Brisbane Roar team, our youth team, they're actually, no, it's not unfortunate because they are doing still quite well. 3 wins from 7 games so far, and I believe they play tonight.
Yes, they do. There's still 1 game remaining in that round. But the results from the weekend, Southwest Queensland Thunder are emphatic 8-1 win over Redlands at home. Gold Coast Knights continue their good season with a 2-0 win away to Boynton Bay United. Peninsula Power, as we say, dominant this season, and 2-0 over Magpies Crusaders, which is another of the big teams up there in Queensland. So a good result for them. Eastern Suburbs won a 3-0 against Brisbane Strikers, who've been embroiled in that controversy. Gold Coast United lost 4-0 at home to Olympic. So Ben Carnes' men, who were so close to the title last season, getting their campaign back on track. And Sunshine Coast won 2-0 against Western Pride. And I believe the Brisbane Roar team is still to play against, I think it is Lions FC that they're playing against. So interesting start to the season up in Queensland. They've had every game streamed live online, just like Victoria. So plenty of opportunity to watch that action if you are so inclined.
And moving on to MPL Western Australia, there's just one team that is standing at the top of the table and has had a perfect start to the season, which is Armidale, 2 wins from 2, and they are currently on 6 points.
Yeah, brilliant start. And how's the Perth youth team doing in Western Australia, Louise? Because they made the grand final last season.
They did. They're having still a decent start. They've won one game and lost one game. So currently they're sitting 6th at the moment. But again, 5th and 2nd, it's very, very tight.
Yeah, so
all on equal 4 points.
Difficult to see a clear picture after 2 games, but Football West underway. And moving on just finally to South Australia. A few interesting results this weekend. Notably, Marcelo Carusca's West Adelaide losing 7-2 at home to Raiders. So obviously they've got some problems at the back that maybe Marcelo Carusca, the star former Adelaide United player, can't fix. And Adelaide City, who has Marcos Flores amongst their ranks, drew 2-2 with Campbelltown, who were last season's premier. So a pretty decent result for Adelaide City. Elsewhere, Croydon Kings drew at home to Metro Stars. Adelaide Comets had a 3-2 away win at South Adelaide. And Adelaide Olympic lost 3-1 at home to Adelaide Blue Eagles, who topped the table after 5 rounds.
And Adelaide United, you say, are 6th at the moment on the ladder. And you can see that many of these A-League youth teams are around the same spot in their respective MPL leagues.
Unfortunately, not the case for the Victorian leagues, because they're in MPL 2. They've actually been relegated. But I saw the Melbourne Victory youth team had an emphatic win on the weekend with Ramat Akbari scoring a stunning goal, I think after about 4 or 5 minutes from 25 yards or so, and got his double in the first 10 minutes. So, yeah, a good result for the Victory youth team in MPL 2.
Great to see that they're doing well, and maybe promotion might be on the cards soon.
Possibly. I think there are quite a few good teams at that level, and Victoria, we know, has a lot of strength in depth, is very strong. So it's been a little bit difficult for those youth sides, City included, to get promotion. I saw also there was a pretty sickening injury in the Melbourne City game over the
that
weekend.
That was awful.
Yeah.
Sam unfortunately broke his leg.
Sam Harrison, is it? Yeah. Yeah, he's involved in a tussle with the goalkeeper. I think the goalkeeper went in with a big two-footed challenge and he managed to leap over the two-footed challenge, but the goalkeeper's outstretched arm actually put him off balance and he just came down awkwardly on his leg and unfortunately broke it. So really best wishes to him and his recovery.
And that game was actually abandoned after that. And it has been rescheduled for Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. at CB Smith Reserve.
And I think they'll be without their goalkeeper for that one because he did get a red card for the attempted two-footer that Harrison managed to dodge but didn't manage to avoid injury. So really disappointing for him. He'd just broken into the City youth side and was scoring goals pretty consistently. And, all the best for his recovery.
Yes, all the very best. Josh, thank you for joining me this evening and thank you for your company at home. If you've missed any of tonight's show, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. I'm Louise Taffer with Josh Parrish. We'll see you again at the same time tomorrow.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.